This is Growing the Valley, a podcast by the University of California, Agriculture and Natural Resources. I'm one of your hosts, Luke Milliron, Farm Advisor for Butte, Tehama, and Glenn Counties.
I'm your other host, Phoebe Gordon, Orchard Farm Advisor for Madera and Merced Counties.
UC Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor Franz Niederholzer and I sat down to talk prune bloom following the Tehama Prune Day at the Red Bluff Elks Lodge this past February. We're now at the tail end of what has generally been a wet and cool California prune bloom. It remains to be seen whether the conditions this year fit in line with the mild, cool, wet years that anecdotally lead to excellent fruit set. Bloom this year has also been characterized by occurring very late, and yet occurring very quickly once it did get underway. If a large number of fruit do set on your trees this year, pay particular attention to the portion of our interview on shaker thinning. Advisor Danny Lytle has a great new online calculator and guide to shaker thinning that we link to in the show notes. Finally, I apologize for the added character in this recording due to the background noise of the Prune Day meeting's cleanup occurring during our conversation.
Prune bloom, generally speaking, if you have between 15 and 20% set of a good canopy of flowers, that's adequate for setting a very nice crop without a need for thinning. And we've had years where we've had terrible set, you know, the disaster years of 04 and 05, like that, we've been about 4 or 5% set. Those are very unusual years, and most years we're looking at excessive set relative to producing large fruit. So we're anywhere between 25 and 40% fruit set is what we'll get in those in many, many years. And prunes, for whatever, Prunus domestica has evolved to its mechanism for dealing with adverse weather is to set a lot of flowers. And that's just a nature of the beast, whether you're talking about Stanley or, you know, any number of the Prunus domestica, including improved French.
So during pollination, we have what we call an effective pollination period. Mm-hmm. So what's involved in the basic biology of this time during pollination?
Okay. So you have the pollen is delivered to the stigmatic surface, which has to be receptive, has to have enough moisture and secretions there to basically help the pollen germinate, grows down, the pollen tube grows down the stigma, it reaches the ovule, but the stigmatic surface has to be viable when the pollen arrives, and when the pollen grows down the stigma, it's got to arrive at a viable ovule. If the ovule has ceased to be receptive, then the pollen tube can arrive, but you don't have the completion of the process and you don't get fruit set. It's for some reason in many of the stone fruits and prunes included, the ovule viability isn't synced up with temperature and that affects the rate of pollen tube growth. In almonds, if it gets cold, the viability of the ovule just sort of slows down, whereas or heats up, it can moderate itself a bit. Whereas in prunes, it doesn't seem as though that process has any feedback to the pollen tube growth. So in these hot years, it looks like the ovule expires before the pollen tubes can grow down to her. And in the cold weather, pollen tube growth is so slow that the ovule can't last long enough to get the set to occur. And that's why we see those little prune that develop, maybe even come through the jackets 3-4 weeks out from full bloom, and yet they drop because they have not been fertilized, which is that key last step.
What's our understanding of the conditions? You mentioned some of the adverse conditions. Mm-hmm. What's kind of the ideal conditions mm-hmm. for bloom? And again, the parameters on either side of that hot and cold that can really get us into trouble in terms of set.
The cold temperatures, maximum daily temperatures below 60 really reduce your set potential, especially if you have an extended cool wet period where all of your bloom occurs during that that below 60 degree temperature. As temperature moves, increases from, say, 60 degrees Fahrenheit for, you know, a high of the day up to 75, 77 degrees, that's gradually increasing percent of germination and the speed of pollen tube growth. But once you get past that peak of 75, 77 degrees, things crash very rapidly. So there's actually a very narrow window between optimum, which is, you know, 75 degrees, say 75, 76, and disaster, which is 84, 85 for fruit set. We don't know exactly what it is, but the research done in cherries that looking at ovule longevity and poor fruit set in certain cherry varieties, it seems that it's the ovule longevity that's the rate limiting process.
So most typically we are dealing with poor set as a result of heated bloom, which you just talked about, and it used to be kind of the anecdotal truth that wet, cool years are high set, but we had kind of an exception to that in 2016. What can happen sometimes in on the other side of bloom conditions?
Prune bloom, Prunus domestica in general. In Oregon, they have trouble setting prunes in cool, wet weather because in Oregon they have extended cool, wet weather. And we sort of had an Oregon spring in 2016 where we had 10 days or so of cool temperatures. Average temperatures were under 60 degrees. Some of them were in the mid-50s for several days on end. The wind blew. It was wet. It was bad bee weather. And bees are not essential to setting a crop in prunes, but they help give you more consistent production. And we don't know exactly what particular part of that equation, whether it's the cold weather or the rain or the wind that generated it. But we know that temperature influences pollen tube growth and pollen germination. And my hunch would be that, and I know some growers actually who told me that they had very good bee activity on some of those days. My hunch is that because pollen tube growth takes place over a number of days, you have to have good weather across a number of days to get that whole thing to work. The bees can fly and get pollinization done on a nice afternoon, but it takes longer than an afternoon for that pollen to germinate and grow down to an ovule. And that's where the process fell apart, it looks like, in 2016.
You've been leading an effort now for many years, tracking and, you know, with weather stations, these hobo devices that measure both temperature and relative humidity in prune orchards, and then tracking the progress of bloom and then eventual set under those weather conditions. And you learn the most in kind of the confusing, confounding years. Mm-hmm. And last year in 2018 was one of those confounding years. So what happened and what might we be able to kind of add to our model, add to our understanding?
Last year we had very warm temperatures at full bloom. Many blocks we were in 84, 85 degrees maximum temperature at full bloom. But we ended up seeing really nice percent set. The years where we get the most trouble with heat of bloom have been flash blooms, where we have plenty of chilling, things are cool for a while, and then all of a sudden things warm up, and bam, we end up with a very quick bloom and it's stacked right on top of a lot of heat. Whereas last year we had decent chilling, but we had periods of warmth inside that tend to stretch bloom a bit. Then we had cool weather. Trees began to bloom in cool weather, and we had 25 or maybe 50% of the bloom happened in cool weather, and then things turned warm and ramped up fast. So while there was heat at full bloom, some of those flowers were developing and the pollen tube growth was occurring when the temperatures were coolish in the 60s, which is good weather for prune bloom. And it's that extended bloom that, despite the fact that we had heat at the end of it, many orchards had a light bloom. But where you did have a decent number of flowers, you did have a good crop.
We can go into it in more depth in another conversation, but what are some of the main contours of how we thin under good conditions to have a good crop? And the main way that growers are grappling with trying to have consistent, larger size fruit each year is through shaker thinning.
It's a funny deal. You know, growers spend their whole season, the winter and the spring, trying to make sure you've got a crop. And then once you get a crop, you shake it off. Shaker thinning is a relatively cost-effective practice. that helps growers manage a crop, especially when you have an excess. It is done with a shaker, so you have to have enough weight in the fruit to allow them to be shaken off. And research over the years has shown that once you hit reference date, which is when 80 to 90% of the fruit show endosperm in the pit, in the developing seed, that's a time when you have enough mass in the fruit to be able to shake it off without damaging the remaining fruit or the tree itself. So usually in at least the Yuba City area, we'll hit reference date. It's about a week after pit hardening occurs, so tip hardening. So you can use a knife to cut across the blossom end of a prune fruit, and when you feel that first tug, you're starting to get to pit hardening, and then a week after that, you should start to see the endosperm, and that's the indication of a reference date. And Bill Kruger, the retired farm advisor in Glenn County, used to say that since the number of fruit in a tree doesn't change all that much in a week's time, he would go in and strip fruit even in the last week or so of April just to see how many fruit were present. And it would be pretty easy to tell if you were, if you had 10,000 or 15 or 20,000 pieces of fruit per tree, you've got a thin. So then you could say, and then you get ready for reference date and watching for it when it comes. You had the shaker ready and ready to go. So usually that's reference date usually hits last week of April, maybe first week or possibly into the second week of May. But that's the window for the start of reference date. And as quickly as you can get across an orchard to remove the fruit is the best way to go. Once you hit reference date, when there's enough mass, the whole process of stripping fruit, shaking as much as you can onto a tarp, and then using ladders and hand stripping the remainder, counting the number of viable fruit in a 1 pound sample, and then scaling that up to by the number of pounds of fresh fruit that you shake off a tree, can give you a rough estimate of number of fruit per tree. And that gives you an idea. Most growers in the spacings we're looking at now are probably in the range of 4,000 to maybe 5,000 pieces of fruit per tree in a 18 by 14, 15, 16 foot down the row spacing. And we can have years where you've got 10 or 15,000 pieces of fruit per tree. And it just you can't produce large, valuable, high quality fruit that way. And that's what the market and what California is about these days.
Right now, we're talking towards the end of February, and conditions have been wet. They're on the edge of some dangerously cold temperatures now. But as we saw with almond bloom last year, how quickly conditions can change. But one thing we do know is that we're going to be heading into bloom with a whole lot of chilling. So how can chilling impact bloom and either to the success or the detriment of farmers?
Well, chilling is, it's required for flowers, for bloom to happen. You have to have a certain amount of chilling, and then you have to have a certain amount of heat following that chilling, even though we're not sure about exactly what the mechanism is. But you need cold, and then you need some heat, and you get bloom. The more chilling you have, the less heat you need to reach flowering. And conversely, the less chilling you have, the more heat you need to have bloom. And the high chill years, often followed by warm weather, abrupt change in warm weather, ends up you get flash bloom because you've got plenty of chilling, and then you don't need that much heat because you've had plenty of chilling. You get that heat, boom, you get bloom. And in our industry, with a single variety, you may have bloom up and down the valley, because oftentimes weather is the same in, in Red Bluff as it is in a warm weather in Red Bluff. You can have warm weather in Yuba City and maybe even further south. We get set up possibly for disaster if we have a rapid flash bloom. Whereas if you have modest chilling, decent but not excessive chilling, and kind of a cool bloom weather, we'll have kind of an extended bloom. And that's actually, even though it's a little weird to see different stages of bloom and maybe even some little fruit developing, some fruit coming out of the jacket while you still have flower in the tree, that's usually better chances for setting a decent crop than if it all happens at once and you've got some hot weather.
I'm going to loop back on bloom, just from a physiological perspective. A lot of what we're discussing in terms of prune bloom is out of growers' control. But if we do have heat at bloom, if temperatures are creeping above 75 degrees and growers have micro-sprinkler irrigation, they can have some impact.
We don't have any silver bullets yet for allowing for good set under extreme the warm weather conditions. The one thing that you have, and you can't do this going into, it's not a quick fix, but if you're thinning your orchards, you are assuring yourself better return bloom. Now, having a good bloom going into a hot weather period, if you've got 5% set of 10,000 flowers, is a whole lot better at the end of the day than 5% set in 5,000 flowers. So the more flowers you hold on the tree, the better under those kind of conditions. As you mentioned, running water helps the evaporation, especially under micro sprinklers. The evaporation of the water may give you a degree or two of cooling. Only need to run the water when the temperatures reach, say, 75 degrees, because when it's that hot and you turn the water on, you'll get rapid evaporation. You're not worried about super saturating the soil. It's like the air conditioner. When it gets hot, you turn it on. You don't turn it on in the morning when it's 60, even though you know it's going to get hot that day. You wait till it reaches a certain temperature and turn it on. So that same thing works with the water. Some growers could, if you're comfortable with the weather forecast and you're just at the beginning of bloom, say 4%, 4 gallons of oil per 100 gallons of water, especially if you're just putting on 100 gallons of water, will give you a day or two delay in bloom. It won't stop the bloom in its tracks, but the flowers that aren't quite as developed yet won't open as quickly, so you can possibly maybe stretch yourself out of a short period of bad weather, hot weather. So possibly delaying bloom, adding water, things of that nature, leaving your orchard grasses a little bit, the orchard floor a little bit shaggy, as opposed to mowing it down tight, which is something you do for cold weather. Leaving it long may add a little bit of humidity and cooling temperature, especially if you're sprinkling water over the top of that. But I'm afraid at this point we don't have an easy solution.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me, and thank you so much for continuing to work tirelessly on these really tough to solve problems for the industry.
Thanks very much, Luke.
Thanks for listening to Growing the Valley, a UCANR podcast. You can find out more about this episode at our website, growingthevalleypodcast.com.
We would like to thank the Almond Board of California and the California Pistachio Research Board for providing funding. We would also like to thank my sister, Muriel Gordon, for writing and recording our theme music.